Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. This morning's guest on With Respect is Alex Rasogiannis. Alex is a writer, an author. He has a number of careers that he's gone through, but he is now written a book called Return to Glenlord, which some of our listeners may be very familiar, is an area in Lincoln Township on Lake Michigan here in Berrien County. And he has an interesting perspective on why he's returning to Glenlord. Alex Rasogiannis, With Respect. So, Alex, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. Very good.
Good.
Thank
good.
You. How are you?
I'm alive. Okay. When you can say that every day, you're in good shape.
That's what counts. Right?
That is what counts. Alex, where are you from originally?
I'm from Chicago.
What part of the city?
My brother, sister, and I were born just south of the University of Chicago at Woodlawn Hospital.
Okay.
And my father and my uncles, and actually my grandfather, had their first ice cream parlor candy business on 26th Street and St. Louis Avenue, mm-hmm. also on the south side. And we were born by the University of Chicago, as I said. But then they moved the business to Berwyn, which is a suburb, a western suburb. And we grew up really right around the block from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm originally from the South Shore area.
Oh.
And then my folks, when my brother and I were young, moved out to LaGrange.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were mostly raised out there.
Sure.
But I do know both areas that you're talking about, mm-hmm. both Berwyn and the area around the University of Chicago. Well, what did you start off doing? I mean, were you a writer from the day you were born?
I doubt it. I don't think so. I did a lot of writing initially in college. I went to Elmhurst College. Mm-hmm. I majored in history and political science.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those fields required a lot of research and writing. So that's where I started writing. We had 30, 40 page papers due for every course I ever had there.
Yeah.
And so I was accustomed to it. And my political science advisor, Dr. Schmidt, he really wanted to see a lot of research in your papers. So I went around to 15 libraries trying to get as much information as I could to impress this guy, you know.
Did it work? Did you impress him?
Yeah, yeah. He liked all those sources because he knew they came from 10 different areas. So I really started at Elmhurst College and then... in graduate school, I did my master's thesis on the growth of Greek-owned businesses in Chicago between 1900 and 1930. And I did a lot of oral interviews with individuals who came over here and wanted to start a business, came from Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of success to these Greek immigrants was to own their own business, ultimately. So they would work at different jobs, saving money with the goal of operating their own business, mm-hmm. because they really didn't want to work for anybody else. And actually, they weren't really skilled people. They weren't skilled tradesmen like the Germans and the Polish and so on. So it was either work for somebody else or start your own business. So they went into the candy business, ice cream business. At one time, they owned the majority of the movie theaters in Chicago.
Hmm.
They had shoeshine parlors. They had flower businesses. Whatever you can think of. And that was the concept of success for them. And I interviewed for that paper about 20 people who obviously are all gone now. and got a lot of insight as to what they experienced trying to achieve these goals. And that was the first major research paper I did. But every class I had in graduate school, the same thing, 30, 40 page papers. So I did a lot of writing before I ever attempted return to Glenlord.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about your family, your father, mother, brothers, sisters? What did that look like? What did that core family, who were they?
My father was in the Greek army for 5 years in the Balkan Wars, 5 years frontline fighting. And after the fifth year, he had a nervous breakdown. And that kind of ruined his life a little bit. He had two or three more breakdowns, but he still managed to be involved with a successful business, candy business,
mm-hmm.
and he had a family, and he invested in real estate. So he was pretty much on the ball. He also had a column for the Greek newspaper in Chicago, one of them,
mm-hmm.
and he was getting phone calls from all over the country of people complimenting him on his news articles.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote mostly about philosophy and history.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few other subjects. And my mother was a housewife at that time. And she came from a well-to-do family in Sparta. They're both from Sparta,
mm-hmm.
Laconia in mm-hmm. Greece. And my mother's father was a doctor. And he sent her and one of her sisters to a French academy on the island of Naxos. They studied there for 4 years, and she was a pianist, an artist, fluent in French and Latin, and of course Greek, mm-hmm. and English.
Mm-hmm.
My brother John and my sister Pauline both ended up in teaching. My sister taught kindergarten and first grade, and my brother taught high school Spanish,
mm-hmm.
and English. Then he got into working for the Senior Citizen Center in Chicago, and he was kind of like a counselor for senior citizens. He got into that. But my sister stayed in teaching, and she retired from teaching. They're both retired.
Mm-hmm.
She's in Florida right now, which is not bad. You know?
Not bad. This is not. Although I just read that they had a tremendous rain the other day down in the southern part of the peninsula. Well, let's talk a little bit about your mom and dad for a second, because that the fighting in the Balkan Wars. What were the dates there? What were the parameters of those 5 years?
Early 1920s, mm-hmm. the Balkan Wars. Yeah, and he had a rough time. He was almost killed twice. I think they were fighting the Bulgarians at that time when he was almost killed, and he came within inches of being dead. And that went on for about 5 years, and he had a first nervous breakdown, and he had two or three more the rest of his life. So he ended up suffering from depression,
mm-hmm.
and he died at about 81. He had a heart attack, but he suffered quite a bit at the end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. We would be sitting at the dinner table. Everybody would be talking and laughing and all of that. And then he would be talking and to everybody. All of a sudden, he would break down and start crying. And nobody could mm-hmm. figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth are you crying about?
Yeah.
And there was no specific reason. It's just that was his condition.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, it just crept up on him,
mm-hmm.
and there it was. And so he suffered quite a bit, and of course my mother did too.
Oh, sure.
Having to kind of take care of him.
But your mom had, with all those classical skills of music and language and I presume art and an appreciation of that, that must have been an interesting contrast with your dad, who had this horrible set of memories about being in the wars.
My father was also educated, just like mm-hmm. my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he too spoke. He was an expert in classical Greek. He wanted, had he stayed in Greece, he would have become a priest. He was very interested in theology. And in the summers at the Greek church in Benton Harbor on Broadway Street, he was the cantor for Father Chris, the priest, and they were very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
So he was educated. He knew Latin and ancient Greek, and he knew a little French. And they were both educated people. In fact, most of the immigrants actually were not educated, but my mother and father were some of the few who came here with a education,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she said, though, that I asked her that question one time, why, if you were an artist and a pianist, and, you know, she had these beautiful paintings that I found when I went to Greece in her father's office, and I brought them back. And I asked her, why didn't you continue that when you were here? And she said, you know something? When I came here, I lost interest.
Really?
And everything, yeah. Yeah. She really didn't want to come here.
Yeah.
She really didn't want to come here. You know why? She had a nice life over there. She had three sisters. Father was a doctor. Her mother. She had uncles, aunts, cousins. They had a nice life over there. They had a very nice life. A different life than what you have here.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of a camaraderie, you know. People would get together more and...
Mm-hmm.
When she came here, of course, my father and my uncles would be in the candy store working
mm-hmm.
from 6 in the morning to 10 at night or whatever the hours were. And she was really kind of left alone, you know. It was like she didn't know the language at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rough, but she did take English lessons at the at our church. And also next door to our candy store was the Oakland Theater, owned by this Mr. Charuchas, who was a friend of my father's, also from Greece. And when she went to the store at night to wait for my father to close the store, instead of sitting there for 4 or 5 hours, she would go next door, go into the movie theater and watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she learned quite a bit of her English.
It's funny you should mention that, because I was in Istanbul some years ago, not too many years ago, and we met a family who were originally from Sarajevo, and they were professional people. The mom and dad were professional people. There's two sons, and because of the war, they had to flee, and they went up to Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So the young kids were raised primarily in Norway,
mm-hmm.
and one son was about 15 years old, and one of the amazing things was his English was Midwestern, mm-hmm. American standard,
mm-hmm.
and he had no reason to have that. He had no... You know, Norway and Sarajevo were his only background. And I asked him, how did you learn your English? And he said, oh, that's interesting. I used to watch American cartoons every Saturday morning in Norway. And that's how he learned his English.
Really?
And his English was superb.
Unbelievable.
Vocabulary, accent, the whole thing. But anyway, I'm fascinated by various languages. I'm going to tell you now, I had an opportunity, I was actually forced to learn some Greek because I was in a seminary and they were going to teach us how to read the Bible in Greek.
Sure, sure.
And so I struggled with the Greek, they call it Koine script, mm-hmm. Koine
mm-hmm.
Dialect, and a very common dialect in the biblical times. And I had a cousin who was Greek from one of the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when one night we got talking about this, and I said, okay, I can do some Greek. And so she said, well, what? And I said, Eis to onomatou patros kai tou huiou kai tou hagiou pneumatos amen.
My God, you're good.
Patrimon ho en toi sura noi sari hagiaste to onomatou hagiaste, I can do it.
God.
But the interesting thing is you just corrected me on something, which is good, because there is a difference between modern Greek
mm-hmm.
and the original, the biblical Greek, but there are still many similarities. And
there
so
are.
She would bless herself, like I just did, in Greek, in modern Greek,
mm-hmm.
The Greek she learned in church, and it was close. I think I said, ento onomatou patros. She would say, eston onomatou patros.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first word meant the same thing, in the, in.
Yeah.
But anyway, but so it is fun. Languages are interesting. Greek was an interesting language. In fact, when I would sit in court, this is true, I would, when I get bored, and I was having to listen to judges' instructions, and they just go on and on. I could do it from memory. I would sit there and write the Greek alphabet.
No kidding.
I would just as a way of keeping myself from going crazy.
Really?
And then sometimes I would write notes to myself using the Greek alphabet, but phonetically using English words.
Sure.
It was just fun. All right.
Sure.
We're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Alex Raisongiannis. He is an author of a book called Return to Glenlord, which we're going to be talking about in just a minute or so. The name of our program is With Respect. This is John Smetanka. We're now back on With Respect with Alex Raisongiannis, an author of a book called Return to Glenlord, and my name is John Smetanka. Now, Alex, before we broke, we were playing around with my very pitiful bit of Greek, which I can't go much further on, by the way. I've gone just about as far as I can go.
And it was very good.
Ah, thank you. Bless your soul. But you had brothers and sisters, and somehow you ended up here in Michigan. Tell me about that.
My sister's godmother, who lived in the South Side, her husband had an ice cream parlor down there called Gertie's Candies on Archer Avenue near California Avenue. They were going to the resorts up here. I can't remember which one. Probably the Riviera on Ridge Road, and she recommended
it to... In Stevensville, Lincoln area.
Yeah. Actually, the Riviera was right across the street from Tozzi's restaurant.
Okay.
And we stayed there, too, eventually. But my sister's godmother recommended to my mother and father with the kids to come up and visit them in one of these cabins, and they were hooked. They came up here, they loved it, and... they stayed at the Riviera Resort, and then later they got a cabin at Clamor Court, which was on Glenlord Road, mm-hmm. maybe about 2-3 blocks from Red Arrow Highway.
Mm-hmm.
We had a cabin there for us. I was about 4 years old at the time. And my father and my uncles, of course, were in Berwyn working at the candy store. They had a business there day and night. And they would kind of take turns coming up for a day or two and that type of thing. But we started out at the Riviera Resort, then Clamor Court. And then my father liked it so much, and all of us did. We loved it. He bought some acreage, about 5 acres, on Ridge Road, 2 doors from Tozzi's, and had a home built there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 1951.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 5 years old, and we still have it because we love it up here. We just can't give it up. In fact, a chapter in the book that touches me quite a bit is the walk I took with my father. And he said, "You do love it up here, I know." And I said, "Yeah, I do." I couldn't figure out why he wanted to talk to me. I was a 10-year-old kid, and he said, "Let's take a walk." And he said, "You know, you and John and Pauline will go your separate ways, and that's fine and no problem. And if you, whatever you want to do in Chicago or Berwyn with the real estate, you want to sell it, go ahead. But, you know, He says, please do something for me. Don't sell Michigan, the home, because it's golden. He told me it's golden. And I said, I know, we love it. How can we sell it? I'll never sell it. And I was 10 years old, you know. I just wanted to get away with, you know, stop with a walk with him and go with my buddies and have fun. You know, I mean, yeah, I don't know why he wanted to tell me this, but he must have known what he was doing, because I still remember that walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says, please don't sell Michigan. And tell John and Pauline, when those years come and you do decide to make all these decisions about what to sell and what to keep, please tell them what we said on this walk on Ridge Road, and tell them to please not to sell Michigan. And I said, I will.
And you haven't.
And we haven't. Right. We rent it out for the winter. We rent it out generally from September to June and keep it in the summer, because we really don't have time to come up here in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And we want it to be occupied. But right now we have a very nice lady who is a social worker in St. Joe. And she's been there for about a year and a half now. So we're letting her stay for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you talk about Michigan, and you use the word don't sell Michigan. It didn't say don't sell the house. He said don't sell Michigan.
Yes.
Because that sounds like a magical word for something in your family.
You
what
got
was
it.
What was that something?
You got it. Right. We never said we're going to Stevensville tomorrow. It was always Michigan. Don't sell the Michigan house. Are you going to Michigan? How long will you stay in Michigan? Have you seen anybody from the old days from Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Not Berrien County, not Stevensville, not mm-hmm. from the house. It's just Michigan, because that word to us was a magical word. That was our Brigadoon.
That's an excellent comparison, because I was just thinking that when the word Michigan to you meant what it meant to us when we came up. Mm-hmm. When my family came up, we would use other words, but most often we would say we want to go to Michigan, or we're going to be in Michigan. But it was it covered experiences that were very poignant to us, even as kids. Michigan meant the lake.
Yes.
It meant the woods.
Yes.
It meant the smell in the air. It meant openness and all these. What did it mean to you and your family?
We were carefree all summer, because, you know, with a summer vacation being up here all year, I mean all summer rather, we were carefree. We had no responsibilities. The beach was two blocks away. We were there every day. We had the outdoor theater 5 minutes away on Glenlord and Red Arrow. We had Silver Beach Amusement Park in St. Joe. We had the House of David in Benton Harbor, a wonderful place. We had Deer Forest in Coloma.
Mm-hmm.
My buddies and I would have our BB guns, and we'd go out in the forest and pretend we were hunters, big game hunters. And it was just a lot of fun. It was a combination of all of those things. It was a carefree world for us, you know. I mean, for me and my friends who were my age, we just loved it. Just mm-hmm. loved coming up here. Couldn't wait to get here.
And probably didn't really want to go back.
It was the worst period of the year to go back. And the reason I talk about that a lot, I write about it in the book, is just to convey the image of what I went through on the trip back and how depressing it was, to show how much I appreciated being up here.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of the summer. That was the end of all those things I just mentioned. Going back to the city, going back to Chicago, back to school. My friends were gone. Mm-hmm. No more beach.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was a depressing thing, but obviously we appreciated it too.
Yeah.
You know,
one of the things that I would underline on that is that when my brother and I would come up, we had the exact same comments. We would have the beach, we'd have the woods, we'd have all those things that you mentioned.
Right.
in Stevensville and around the area, the sure. general area. But it was the great, great value to us as kids, may not have been to our parents, but to us, was that freedom that you talked about, the carefreeness to be kids,
mm-hmm.
which today, unfortunately, so many of our kids don't have. Mm-hmm. They don't have, they're stuck on videos, games, or whatever,
right, right.
Or television, or in so many activities, formal planned activities, that they don't get a chance to get out and be spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what effect in the long run that's going to have on those people that didn't get a chance in those magical years from 6 to 12 or 14
right.
to be spontaneous. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, we never had a computer. We really didn't even watch television
mm-hmm.
at the house in Michigan. We had one, I think, later, maybe after 1955, 56. But we really didn't watch it that much. We were outside. We were always out. In fact, with my family, we had an outdoor patio in the front of the house, an outdoor patio in the back. And our home was kind of like a meeting place for a lot of the Greek people that came from Chicago. They would come to our house, and we would have coffee and pastry and all of this type of thing. And after the beach, the full day at the beach many times, we had barbecues in the back of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were always out. We were not inside hardly at all, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that struck me in reading your book, and I enjoyed it very much. I found it a great read. Because not just because I knew a lot of the places.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up about a mile from where you grew up,
oh.
Over on Notre Dame Road.
Yes.
And my grandparents bought a farm there back in 1914 when it was just a wide open area.
Right.
So we began coming up here much later, obviously, but Grandpa, who is a lawyer in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Bought it. He and Grandma bought it so that they would have a place for these kids, their kids, their five kids, to get out and be away from the city for the summer.
Sure.
And in fact, they would be packed into the car the day after school let out, and they would come back to Chicago
yes.
the day before school started.
Yes, right.
But Grandpa, to make a point, would not allow electricity in the house for years.
Mm.
He would no telephones, therefore no radios. He would have kerosene lanterns. I remember reading by kerosene lights.
Interesting.
But he had a huge collection of classical books, and he was going to require his kids to work hard on the farm for 8 hours or 7 hours or whatever, to spend some time on the beach, have their meals, and then at night sit them down and have them read
Smart
the classics. Well, unfortunately, they they were more spontaneous, and he kept going back to the city, and Grandma was not quite the disciplinarian that Grandpa was. And so they got away with not reading quite so many
sure.
of the classics. But at any rate, they did have a good time. And it was a positive effect on them. I mean, Dad would tell me stories about early Stevensville in his life, and that friends that he made that were who lived here all their lives.
Right.
It was a good experience. But now I want to branch off into something which is your book is not a linear book. It is not I was born on such and such a date, and my first memories were, and mm-hmm. I remember this, and then line, you know, date after date after date, this is what happened. It is an episodic book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about why you chose that particular format for writing. And we'll talk about some of the experience that you write about, but I'm interested in the format
also.
Sure. We're talking to Alex Rassogiannis, sorry. His book is Return to Glenlord, This is With Respect. My name is John Smetanka, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Alex Rasogiannis. This is John Smetanka, and our program is With Respect. Now, Alex, when we talked about, just before we broke, I said I wanted to talk about the format that you used, and as well as the various episodes in your experiences here. And there's a logic to it, but it's a little bit different. And the subtitle of your book, which is Memories of Michigan Summers, flows right into what we're going to be talking about. Now, you didn't write a novel. These are true stories, right?
Yes.
You didn't write a chronology.
No.
You wrote about different things.
Correct.
Why?
I didn't want to get bogged down into writing a historical paper here. If I were writing for a history class or a political science class, obviously, you needed to have everything documented, and I didn't want to bother with that. Namely because I couldn't remember the months and the years that many of these events took place. May have been 1955, may have been 1958. I don't remember that. I remember what we did, I remember what we talked about, but to put in the exact dates, I didn't want to say we listened to one of our favorite songs in 1956, and then somebody will come out and say, well, wait a minute, that wasn't released till 1959. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So I didn't know those things. I mean, I couldn't remember. I remember some of the dates, some of the years.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I wanted to get more of the concept of what Michigan meant to me and to my family and how it's still a part of our lives, rather than getting into chronological detail and things that I don't think are that important.
The French Impressionists, a number of the French Impressionists painted different scenes in Paris or the country parts of France. And if you look at them, you recognize what they're painting, but there's it's done with colors and splashes, mm-hmm. and it's not realism in the sense that they're dealing with particular closely defined figures in a beautifully described and realistic landscape. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that is what I got out of your book. You're writing about memories.
Yes.
You're writing about impressions.
Yes.
Of a kid.
Yes.
And I think that, again, one of the things I thought was fascinating was by the middle of the book, I was understanding what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, it gave me a full picture of growing up. And we all look back in our lives at how we lived back in our 12, 13, 14. Probably none of us could give because I've tried it, to write down a chronology of what happened. But you can take the pastiche of events and things that stick in your memory, because they're what make you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Many times I thought I was finished with the book. And then I thought, well, I'll put it away for a while. And 5-6 days later, I said, wait a minute, I forgot about the so-and-so incident with mm-hmm. my buddies. I forgot about that. I went back and put it in. And that would keep coming up over and over again. I started out with like 80 pages
mm-hmm.
and ended up with 240-something.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, let's talk about some of those things some of those memories that began to formulate when you were writing this book. To take form, and what were the ones that hit you the first?
I started out with an outline. I was actually, at the time, working for the U.S. government. I was in labor investigation. I was doing a compliance review in Iowa, in Cedar Rapids, and I was watching the flow of the river next to a park, and I thought of the St. Joe River in St. Joe, and I thought about Michigan and our days here. And I started putting together an outline. I asked myself, how much can I remember of what I did and what we did up to the age of about 12? Mm-hmm. Because those were the best years. Those were the unique years of the resorts and the huge crowd of Greeks that came from Chicago to Berrien County. So people ask me, why only up to the age of 12? Well, those were the years, the best years that we had here, mm-hmm. and as far as I'm concerned. And as a kid, in that age bracket, when you're in grammar school, that's when you have all your fun.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, high school and college, you're not going to be doing the things that you did when you were 10 years old.
Well, let's do this. For those people who are not familiar with the Glenlord area, why don't we track out what you mean by Glenlord? What is this area that you grew up in?
I think the reason I selected that title instead of Return to Stevensville, Glenlord sounded a little bit more romantic to me. It's a beautiful word. It mm-hmm. really is. And it's the name of our beach
mm-hmm.
and the name of the road, Glenlord Road. And I think a few businesses were called Glenlord mm-hmm. also.
Glenlord Pizzeria, I remember that.
Yeah, the Glenlord Pizzeria, which is still there, obviously. Yeah, yeah. Pasquale, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it sounded a little bit better, so that's why I stayed with that title. But Glenlord is more to me like an idea. It's more of a concept of a romantic era for me, mm-hmm. which really is, if we can say, gone with the wind.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the geography of this. Is you've got Red Arrow Highway, which runs from St. Joe. It becomes Lakeshore Drive in St. Joe, and then it goes on all the way on down to New Buffalo and on to Chicago.
Sure.
So that parallels the lakeshore.
Mm-hmm.
Off of that, crossroads to that, we have Glenlord, which is right in Lincoln Township here in Berrien County, and it's an east-west street mm-hmm. which runs down towards the lake.
Yes.
And it actually goes straight into the lake, and that's where Glenlord Beach is.
Exactly.
But now it also bends around to the left, is just before you get to the beach, and you've got Ridge Road.
Yes.
Upon which Tosi's restaurant is located, and also your home
Correct.
Is located.
Yes.
And that runs down to Marquette Woods Road.
Yes.
And Marquette Woods Road runs to the right, down towards the lake.
Yes.
Again. Parallel to Glenlord, and that sort of boxes your area in.
You just described our world.
Yeah.
That was our world.
Well, my world was just barely south of that.
Right.
About half a
right.
mile south of that.
Yes.
But I remember, now this you're going to have to help me with, because my memory is this. When we were kids, we would go out hiking or go for like milk to a store on Marquette Woods Road, which we called the Greeks. And
oh,
I don't
really?
Know why. But we guessed that there were some people there who ran it who were Greek. And I remember going in and buying candy, and I remember buying milk or eggs that we were bringing back to the house. But I do remember the Greeks. That was the first time I thought about the Greeks in this area. And then when you came along and wrote about it, I thought, I wonder if that's part of that world. So, but that would be in the south end of your world.
Yes.
And up that whole area that I've just described, Glenlord Road to Marquette Woods Road, and it's now restaurant and built up, a lot more built up.
Yes, yes.
All used to be dunes and grass
right,
and
right.
We used to call it prairies.
Right.
And you could in fact roam free. I remember in our area, we could be gone 7 hours playing. And our parents would not have to worry about us.
Sure.
Unless, of course, we fell from a tree, in which case we would
right.
have been dead. But
right, yeah.
but anyway, tell us about some of those things, some of those stories that you remember and that struck you, the events that happened that found their way into this book.
Oh, that's a difficult question. There's so many memories there. When you talk about being gone for 7 hours at a time and roaming around with your friends, we did the same thing. We would be roaming around all day out in the woods with our BB guns and come back hours and hours later, and nobody ever questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a swamp. We had 5 acres of land, and the neighbors on each side also had 5 acres. My father and the two neighbors had to sell 2.5 acres of their property to the city to build a new Stewart school. The original Stewart school was on the corner of Glenlord and Red Arrow Highway. They tore that down and they built a new one on our property.
Mm.
But next to that school was a swamp, and I think maybe it was more of a marsh, but we called it the swamp. It had cattails, it had water, it had everything. And my brother would lead us on an expedition. He had a pith helmet, just like John Hall in Ramar of the Jungle was in the 1950s, with a pair of binoculars hanging from his neck. He took it seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And we had an expedition to the swamp. It was a big deal. We had our BB guns and looking for Indians and all this type of thing. We'd all get to the swamp. And finally, we'd look at it. There it is. There are the cattails. There's the water. Oh, I see this and I see that. Are there any animals? Everybody's looking and looking and looking. And finally, John would say, well, does everybody have enough of this? And we said, yeah, let's go back. We had enough. So we marched all the way back to the house. And you'd think we'd had our fulfillment of this for the summer. 1 week later, let's go back to the swamp. Now, does that make sense? I don't know if it does.
It does for 12-year-old kids. Now, but there's something else. There's a vignette in there where it was not just boys. There was girls.
Yes.
And you had some interesting experiences meeting girls on the beach or wherever that kind of opened your eyes.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
different.
Oh, we fell in love 5, 6, 7 times. I put that in quotations.
Yeah,
love,
I know.
Yeah.
But one of the stories I loved was when you were building forts. We used to build forts when we were kids.
Yes.
And you built forts or you built tree houses or you tried.
We tried.
And the girls did too. How did that – tell us about that.
We had a place that we call a hideout. We'd watch these cowboy movies, and as soon as the cowboys committed a bank robbery, they'd all go to the hideout, some shack or cabin out in the mountains. So we thought that was kind of cool. We wanted a little hideout, too. So we went in the back of Jimmy's house, who lived next door to me, and we put some cardboard boxes together and put in some old beach towels, and it was nothing. I mean, it was really nothing. And my sister and Angelo's sister, Irene, and maybe another girl came along and they said, what are you guys doing in there? Well, this is our hideout here. We have, this is our home away from home. And they started laughing. And we said, what are you laughing about? That thing is ugly, they said. And we said, can you do any better than that? They said, sure we can. Anybody can do better than you guys. We were insulted and we declared war on them. We told them to get out of here. So they went and built their own little home, and it was a beautiful place. It was really, we were all impressed with it. And we ended up joining them and abandoning our place. You know?
But there, you didn't all together go over.
It was we went
who
one
went
at
first?
A time. Yeah, Jimmy and I went over there to kind of check things out as a truce. And Angelo and Elke waited for us. But the girls treated us to all this food and pop, and it was beautiful inside with candles. I mean, you wanted to stay there all day compared to ours. Ours was a rat trap. And those guys were wondering what's taking us so long to come back from after reporting to report what happened with the truce. And so Jimmy and I didn't want to go back. You know, we kept drinking pop and this and that. And we said, the heck with them. We're not going back there. And they started yelling out, traitors, traitors. So then they came over, and they didn't start a fight with us for not coming back. They were so amazed at how beautiful this place was, they joined us. So I said, we have met the enemy, and we are theirs. The war was over, and we surrender.
That happens a lot in life. It happens a lot in life.
Yeah.
We're going to take another break. We're talking to Alex Rasogiannis, who is the author of Return to Glen Lord, Memories of a Michigan Summer, of summers, plural. This is John Smetanka on With Respect. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Alex Rasogiannis, who is the author of Return to Glen Lord, Memories of Michigan Summers. This is John Smetanka. The name of our program is With Respect. And now, what did you get out of all this? What did you get, first of all, out of the experiences of those summers? Let's start with that. What did it do to you?
It was a part of my world that helped shape my life. And it gave me an alternative to the city life. And we grew up knowing two worlds. Mm-hmm. One was Chicago and one was Michigan, totally different. And that additional world, I think, helped shape my character, my perspective, my outlook, my values.
How?
Everything.
How?
Well, it was such a beautiful life up there, but also you were removed from the city and you had a chance to meet all kinds of different new people that you did not know in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like shaping your personality, your character, learning from all of these people. And we did that in Michigan, and I don't think those same experiences we could have in Chicago. It was a mm-hmm. different environment up here.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different environment.
Well, now no place in the world is Valhalla, is no Eden, no heaven. There are problems everywhere you go, and
right.
And there were experiences that you had, and you write about some of them, where it was not all that pleasant. You had some problems with young guys who were causing you problems.
Oh, yes, that's
and
true.
And why don't you tell about that? Because that's something that's interesting as well.
Well, in that age bracket, there are guys that some of them are bullies, and there were some that wanted to start fights with us. And I guess they resented the fact that we were from the city. We were city slickers to them, and they mm-hmm. were local boys. And some of them resented that. And, they did try to start fights with us, and they got the best of us most of the time because we were not very tough. We tried to act tough, but really inside we weren't that tough. So
did you end up blending with any of them, any of the local people and the local kids?
You know something? We never did.
Mm.
We never did. We had me and my buddies and other Greek kids that would come from Chicago. We were kind of like a family.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really blend with anybody. And I don't think we wanted to. And I don't think the locals wanted to blend with us that much either, because I don't know what the reason for that is. Later on, I got to meet people who lived up here all year long, and we became friends,
mm-hmm.
and it became easier. But during my grammar school years, we kept to ourselves. And actually, our parents did, too. They had their sets of friends who came from Chicago, and we were friendly with a lot of the neighbors who were not Greek. I mean, that happened. That was common, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, as I said, we were a community within a community.
Mm-hmm. There are
in Chicago, it was at one time known as a city of neighborhoods.
Right.
And when I was raised there, it was very defined. That is, you would have a German community next to a Polish community, next to an Irish community, next to a Greek community. And
right.
But there were defined lines, and you stayed within your boundaries, and not all the time, but most of the time, especially for your friends.
In Michigan.
In Chicago. I found that the area that I lived hemmed in. I was 12 years old. I was 7 years old. So
right.
My world was narrow. It's around the houses that I lived
sure.
in. And there tended to be, in one area was the Irish, and the other area was actually more diversified over in the other part of South Shore. But I found that we were very, in a sense, we were very clannish. That has changed in the city. There's not as much in Chicago. There's not as much defined areas as, you know, the Greeks stay on this side of the Archer Avenue and the Poles are
right,
on the other
right,
side.
Yeah.
Much more loosey-goosey, if you will.
Right.
And I've always wondered about how much of that was replicated when folks from Chicago came up here. Because you're talking about a Greek community of friends in Chicago, and their friends here, the same friends, just moved sort of en masse.
Yes.
And didn't sort of blend in with the people around that much.
And that was the case in Chicago, too. Don't forget, my mother and father came from Greece. So their support system, if you could call it that, were other people who came from Greece, who were Greek, mm-hmm. from Greece, and Greek Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
Their friends, 90% of them, were Greek,
mm-hmm.
from Greece.
Mm-hmm.
That was their world. That was their support system. Whereas their kids had Greek friends, but also American friends, people mm-hmm. of other nationalities. But in Michigan here, I guess with our parents being the leaders, it was more or less communicating with other Greek people
mm-hmm.
from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Almost 90%.
It's interesting because some of my relatives, my distant relatives, lived in that same Glenlord area,
mm-hmm.
the Helmuths and the Mixes. I don't even know those names, but they were in that same general area right there on Glenlord and Ridge Road.
Yes.
And they also were down in New Buffalo, and down in New Buffalo where there is now the Greek Museum. Am I correct?
Yes.
Tell us about that for a minute.
The Greek Museum is at the Annunciation Church in New Buffalo. It's right off of the highway on U.S. 12.
Mm-hmm.
That church was in Benton Harbor, and that's where my father was a cantor. And Father Chris was the priest.
Chris, what was his last name? Because I think everybody knows him.
Moulas.
Moulas.
M-O-U-L-A-S.
Mm-hmm.
Father Chris Moulas.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed altar boys. And so our fathers volunteered our names to become his altar boys. And we didn't want to do it. We didn't know anything about that. And we became his altar boys. And we were really bad.
You were bad.
Yeah, I mean, we were just something else. I write about that because it's humorous now, but it's really, when you think about what we did back there, I mean, you know, he had, in the Greek church, when you have communion, it's real wine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we were taking sips of the wine in the back of the altar while he was in the front. And then the bread, we'd carve it up and eat that. And then on top of that, we took turns going out to the side of the church. There was a parking lot there. We knew everybody was in the church. And next to the parking lot was the priest's home. Well, his whole family was in church. And so it was safe for us to smoke cigarettes out there. We were 10, 11, 12 years old. And then we'd have mints and Clorets and all of this and make sure we filled our mouths with candy.
Did they ever catch you?
Yes, they did.
Ooh,
later on.
What happened?
Yeah. Well, Jimmy and I were smoking, and we got a little careless. As soon as I walked into the house, my mother, who was sitting down having coffee with Mrs. Demure, Jimmy's mother, all of a sudden she came over to me, and I didn't know why she was coming. And she says, Poor Capnesius, which means, my God, you've been smoking. I said, no, I haven't. Yes, you have, you have. And they let me have it. And Mrs. DeMure let me have it. And Mrs. DeMure said, if you were smoking, Jimmy was smoking too. Let's go get him. So we all marched to Jimmy's house. And we had just come back from the beach. We were tired, swimming all day. Jimmy was sleeping on the couch, totally out. He wakes up and his mother is standing over him with a broom. He looks up and, you've been smoking. No, I haven't. Boom, 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 boom. No, I haven't. No, I haven't. You boys smell like ashtrays. So we were careless once in a while. We got caught.
Well, you know, a couple of the other places that you write about, which are memories for those of us who were raised in this area. And now we're not talking about summer people. We're talking about all.
Right.
For example, the outdoor theater.
Yes.
That on Red Arrow and Glenlord.
Right.
That was a great place for all of us.
It was.
So much fun.
It was. We were there every week.
Yeah.
They changed movies, I think, every 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
They gave you a little booklet of coming attractions.
Yes,
they were great. They were really great.
And they had dollar night for the cars.
They had dollar night, but some other nights when they didn't have dollar night, we try to hide in the back seats and put blankets on ourselves.
Yeah.
We were having fun, you know. Yeah. And then in front of the concession stand, they had outdoor chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was warm out that particular night, we'd go and sit outside too. You know, the outdoor theater was a wonderful place. And they had wonderful hot dogs, too.
Yes, and popcorn, I remember. And
everything,
Those silly old speakers that you couldn't quite get them properly hooked to your car.
You couldn't.
And the sound wasn't all that good.
It wasn't. But it's what we had,
and we
accepted it.
One night, because this area, when I was 10, this is a 12-year-old story. That is when I was 12 years old. We went to a movie with Matlock was the villain, and he I don't remember the name of the movie, but I remember Matlock was just a scary guy in this movie. And my mom and my brother and I were driving home, back down Red Arrow, down Marquette Woods, down onto Notre Dame, and this car kept following us.
Oh my God!
All the way.
Wow.
And we were sure that it was Matlock. and we would get we he got all the way to our driveway, and then we went in praying
that
he wasn't.
Yeah,
and then he kept on going, so
he
we were
did.
Safe.
Never knew who he was.
Never knew who he was. It could have been the local priest for all I know, or Saint Bernadette of Lourdes or something.
You never know. Saint Bernadette. Yeah.
Yeah. But
we loved telling scary stories and listening to them. We loved that, doing that all the time.
Yeah.
And my brother and Peter Otis, who was staying at Clamor Court, they loved to scare the hell out of the kids with these stories. And every week, they tell the same story. Everybody knew the ending, but they wanted to hear it again.
One of the worst experiences in my young life was when my cousins and I and my brother came from a movie down in Bridgman, took the bus up to Red Arrow Highway and John Beers, got off and had a walk back on Notre Dame Road.
Right.
There were no lights.
No.
There were no street lights. There was no moon. There was pitch black. You
exactly.
couldn't see the hand in front of your face.
Exactly.
My cousins told us the most horrible stories about how our parents were massacred. Mm. And they're all dead. We'll never see them again.
Really?
And we're walking along this road, and I'm scared to death. And we get down this long pathway to our driveway to our house. We get up to the house. We're climbing up, and we're sure that our parents are dead or that these older cousins are bullying us.
Amazing.
We get up, open the door, and there are no lights on.
Oh.
Except we went in through the living room and into the porch area. We could see red dots coming out of the darkness, and we thought it was the devil. And it turns out it was my parents who were smoking, and their cigarette, they were sitting there talking.
with the other adults. At any rate, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry to have to bring this to a conclusion because this is so much fun. But we're talking to Alex Rasogiannis, and he is the author of a fascinating book available by ordering or by going to our local bookstore at called Return to Glen Lord, Memories of Michigan Summers. Alex, thank you very much for joining us. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
The name of our program is With Respect, and we're on every Sunday morning at 11 and every Thursday morning at 10. And until next time, remember our motto is, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.